current vote put it, the court today has declared unconstitutional every sign ordinance in the United States. That's a little bit of an overstatement, but it's a very broad decision. And what we tried to do with it is to make a change that conformed to the language of the decision, and yet was, if you will, a rational application for zoning, so that it was a reasonable way to apply it. The biggest thing that case did was to emphasize the concept of regulation of speech by subject matter. And said, you can't, if you regulate the content of speech, you have to meet a substantial burden of proof that you don't have a presumption of validity. You have to meet a substantial burden of proof that it's the most limited way you can regulate it, etc. And the obvious thing would be, on Sunday you should attend the Presbyterian Church. That's an obvious constitutional requirement, if you had to say that. But if you had a zoning ordinance that said, you shan't advertise Presbyterian churches, that would be an unlawful restraint on speech and exercise of religion, and therefore would be presumptively unconstitutional. In this case, that case is an example, in my opinion, of the old maxim, hard cases make bad law, because it came out of New Mexico, and it was a case where, for some reason, the locality didn't like this little church. And, I don't know anything about that was a good idea or bad idea or whatever, but they clearly didn't like this church. And they passed a regulation that said, anytime you have some sort of temporary sign, and it may even gone so far as to say temporary sign dealing with religion or something like that, or temporary meetings or something like that, it can only be up for 12 hours before the meeting, and that's been taken down 3 hours afterwards. Well, this church didn't have a building. They moved around from building to building. So in order for their congregants to attend, they had to know where it was. And if you think about it, you got church at 11 o'clock in the morning. You can't take the sign up until 11 o'clock the preceding night. And you have to take it down by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And in effect, what they were saying is, we don't want this church. And it was painfully obvious, and the court didn't escape the court. The court said, you can't do that because you're regulating the content of speech. They made some other language that suggested that it was not just this church, it was other things, particularly political speech. Our political signs, the ordinance, the political signs, was specifically designed to accommodate an opinion of the Fourth Circuit from about 10 years ago. And it was very carefully tailored to fit that. And the federal Supreme Court basically just sort of threw that out. So, in effect, then what we did was we said, we can't deal with the content of the sign and categorize it. We can say it's commercial, we can say it's some of the other commercial, but we can't say it's political, that sort of thing. We cannot regulate it by subject matter. So that's what we did, we came up with a new category, which was simply temporary signs. So if you had a sign that said, join the Democratic Party, that would be the same thing, because that's not a temporary sign. I think that's correct. That fits a number of different things, yard sales, things like that, and they're treated all the same. So you can see what I mean about the subject. The second thing is that there are a number of statutory amendments that change language in the legislation. The most obvious of those is with respect to board zoning. They made a lot of changes in that section. They didn't really change much about the substance. They changed a little bit about the substance, but mostly it was, I think it was really improved. It made the language more readily understandable, in my opinion. But it did change a lot of language, so we had to make a lot of improvement. It's not a dramatic change in terms of substance, in my opinion, but if you see a lot of changes in that section, that's what goes on. We didn't make those up, they're just they're tracking the statute. And there are several other statutes like that. The third category we had was ones where there was some grammar that just didn't make much sense. Didn't like the wording in some cases. Those don't change the substance at all. They simply move the language around. Some of these things you probably don't have much discretion about because the statute says what you do, and you better do it. The sign ordinance, there's more than one way to skin this cat, I'm sure. We spent a long time trying to figure out what was the best way to do it, including simply saying, we think Justice Thomas didn't really mean what he said. We think Justice Kagan was right, and it wasn't intended to overrule this whole body of law. And we decided not to do that. We decided to take a more conservative approach, and that is to say, okay, we'll do what Justice Thomas says and categorize signs other than by their content. So that's really all of that. The subdivision ordinance amendments are really simpler. They're really, most of them, I think, deal with statutory references, where we just haven't caught up with the references to the statutes. I don't think there's any substantive change in the subdivision ordinance. So I think it would be easier for me with the staff to say questions.
I do. Look at page 129, which is actually chapter 22 zoning. It would be page 2 of 109. And it's down to 22-7-5.
What was the page?
129 in our package. What it says, the applicant shall submit 5 copies of the final master plan to the planning director. The final plan shall have been prepared by a ...
This is not text of the ordinance. This is an explanatory outline of text of the ordinance.
Okay.
You see it says page 109.
Yes.
I think it's our page 128. This is an explanatory outline.
Okay. I just,
2275. Yeah. That's, the language is, this is one of those where there's a grammatical problem. We have verbs. The language now says 5 copies of the final master plan, period. The final plan shall be prepared by a licensed surveyor, engineer, landscape architect, and architect.
Okay.
That's what the ... is.
Your limited 3 minutes. Come to the microphone and state your name then no one come forward? I'll go back to asking about anyone has a motion on ZPA 1504.
Before anybody gets too intimidated, I don't think you need to read the whole thing. Just refer what's in the time.
I move to recommend that the planning commission approve the amendment and the company resolution to begin county zoning ordinance and entitle the ordinance to amend and reenact chapters 22. The ordinance followed, thereof amending and reenacting the planning consent ordinance to conform to the current major legislation as amended in federal court decision.
I have a motion by Mrs. Ziegler to approve the ZPA 1504. You'll have a second. They have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Next public hearing will be ZPA 1505. We will begin at the time of one that...
That's what we're about to do now.
And to make any comments on ZP 1505, please come forward to the microphone at this time. It will be 11:53. Seeing no one coming forward, we will have discussion of the planning commission. Does anyone have any questions or anything like that? Or do I have a motion?
Safety convenient, practical in that regard.
question about the residential component of this application. There's some discussion with regard to the caretakers' quarters. And the Planning Commission wants to know what the zoning implications were for caretaker facilities and their temporary night watchmen. Mr. Stewart made a determination based on the current zoning. Accessory dwelling unit is permitted. Of course, that's a primary dwelling unit is on the property. Zoning ordinance does allow for an accessory dwelling unit that's going to be larger than one half the finished square footage of the primary dwelling. Further, Mr. Stewart also determined that if caretaker dwelling unit is approved on this property with this application, it would be shown or demonstrated on this also, an individual posted guard shack would be allowed as an accessory to primary use that would be no longer in house. So, a little variation. I did want to show the commission also the delineation of the existing easement. It does appear to go through three parcels, ABC.
Make this whole thing larger. Can you do so I can see? Because I can't see what you're doing.
This is the existing view looking south along 53. If you're posted after your park at the exit, waiting to turn either left or right, this will be your view looking right, and that would be south along.
And then James did a presentation, Mr. Payne offered an explanation, and then Mr. Bibb had a question, which I'll go back and get to tomorrow.
With that, I have a suggested motion, and
then we had
there's also
a suggestion comments.
Nobody
wanted to speak.
I wasn't aware they'd been submitted until today. It was from my fault, but I looked at them today, and I was able to very strange documents, especially the pool. On the other hand, it's not up to me to criticize them because there's affirmative. So I looked at the deed, and the pool were simply to see whether they purported to establish a recognized grant in case may be an easement in favor of this property, which they do, and appear to. Whether they, if it is consistent with what represented, and it does appear to do that, and whether or not they appear on the face to show any restriction on the use, which they do not. Now, based on that, it appears to me that this easement probably would be lawful to use it in connection with the commercial use. The other issue that I had concerns about was whether the fact that this easement is off the property and whether being off the property could be used for a use which is not permitted on the property across. And if you recall, last time I told you there was a Supreme Court case that addressed this. I looked that up, and the Supreme Court case does, in fact, say that if there's an accessory use, it has to be on the same property. When that case came down, I was aware of it, and when we amended the zoning ordinance in, I think it was 2005, the same year the case was decided, we actually amended the zoning ordinance to accommodate that case. We created something called a necessary subordinate use, which is kind of like a super accessory use, one of the things that's set out in section 22.17.18 of your zoning ordinance, if you want to look at what it does basically is if you have to, if there's a use that you have to use in order to use some lawful use on another property, that's permitted in all districts. So that if, for example, you had a C1 property and it was landlocked and had an easement over the property, it was A1, even though commercial use is not permitted in A1, the driveway would be considered to be conforming in that A1 lot, for that A1 lot, for the benefit of C1. So that, I'm satisfied with that. I think the main issue here deals with the adequacy of this easement. And one thing I do want to emphasize here, because the staff's comments today were sort of emphasizing the easement, the effect of the easement. That doesn't mean you should forget about everything else. So if you think this use is appropriate and not pertinent to adjacent properties, et cetera, that's fine. If you think it does, it would have occurred, or it's out of character, or whatever it might be, regardless of what you think about the easement, then you'd be entitled to recommend it not. So I don't know that my comments would be made clear or extremely obtuse. But, if you have questions, then you'd like to try to address it.
And I'd like to tell you all that I did ask Mr. Payne a question about something that I had looked up and stuff about right away.
Servitude, that's the way it's normally expressed, doesn't mean that there's more traffic. It means either there's a type of traffic which is not permissible, or it serves additional property. So if you had parcel A up on the road and parcel B right behind it, and you had easement over A to serve B, and then B grants an easement to C back here, so C can get to the road over him and then over A as well, that's unlawful because that's an additional burden on the servitude. If you had an easement, let's say, on A that said to be used for residential and agricultural purposes, and you wanted to go in and put in a concrete plant, that would be an additional burden on the servitude because of the nature of it. I don't see any such language in these easements, so I think you can. I think it would be lawful for this use to be used in industrial displays. Now, that is not to say that you can't consider the effect of the traffic on the road, either for the general public or for the neighbors. You certainly do have the right to consider that.
Have you gotten in contact with the parties that caused this court order? In my research, I believe I played my old paper files. Originally, it was a log wrote there. The earliest I can read without making misinterpretation of broken English, how it was written, you know, I'm sure you've seen it, where it's written. A lot of it didn't exactly make sense. I was like, get a little confused. After 1860, there was a mill on the property, and it was a logging road for the 180 acres. In 1960, it was petitioned to be a road to something else. In 1980, it became an official road by the courts. There's a logging road back there. And the funny thing is, the person who I am purchasing the property from sold this property to James Musselman in 1996. He's claiming none of this existed. And it was all predating him from Mr. Harry's relatives. This got handed down by death to us, you know, somewhere at how that happened. And yet all this existed, so why would he compromise himself? The same thing with that thing where he says his drain field was there. They paid for the drain field, as Harry says, the drain field's here, not over there. I know where the road is. It's not here, it's, you know, so I don't understand where he's basing his conversation from. But as far as I've walked the property with him, we've discussed little things that and I didn't expect him to come here to give a hassle to this. I know originally he tried to landlock Mr. Harry, and he offered him some money for the property. He says, this road doesn't exist, you're landlocked, yeah, I'll give you this much money. He thought it was crazy. So that's his ultimate, you know, idea here. So, yeah, I don't know what else to tell you. Did I answer your question correctly?
There is, that's not exactly what happened.
Okay, tell me. I don't know.
This parcel was originally more like 100 acres. And it's described as farming on what is now Route 619.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a need for an easement from 163. The need for the road from 53 came about when 619 was realigned. And that's what, if you recall, there was a sketch plan that showed 619 was some distance, and I think it actually touched it just in one corner. That was when 619 was realigned. The easements start coming into existence, I think, in 1980. And 1980 takes it down to one lot away from this, from the lot in question. The order takes the rest of the road. And again, that's a very strange order. And I didn't want to undertake to look at the court file and see what the evidence of the pleadings did. I just take the court's order on the case. So whatever the status of this was, and my memory is that Mr. Musselman actually acquired the property from the Harris. The Harris acquired from James Birch.
Maddie Lunch.
And they were, that goes way back. And there are these, D-Book 11 was the first one I saw. It was 1919, I hope. But again, those deeds in those days wouldn't make a difference because there was no need for an easement at that time. It was one parcel and had friends on 619.
That was also a thing done to allow the logging done in 1990. These were given to that. They established a sawmill to cut the wood off of that property. I think one of the questions that Mr. Gaines had, have you talked to landowners as far as entrance goes? Because one of my main concerns, that a very deep concern, is I'm always concerned about the safety of the citizens of Louisiana County. And we've looked at this entrance, and it's not very good exiting out onto 53. For your sight lines, VDOT has said that it would require at least 500 feet going each thing. It would not be up to them to require right-of-ways to open up the sight lines through there. That would be up to you to do that. major concerns about the safety of people coming out of there. I also have concerns about the roads going back in there, the conditions and stuff like that.
Roads condition will be made 50 foot wide through and gravelled. I will take care of that after this is approved. As far as the road frontage here, people owning it, I've made one call to them, and I did not get a response from this. I guess I will have to go see them and see what we can do about this. But I measured almost all the other entrances throughout every piece of property, going commercial, going down to Palmyra, and the width of them, and I'd be almost in the same criteria that they are, and how they mapped out, how the roads going in and out. You look at Lazy Ranch. It's got a very, very thin road, and it's like, woo, it really does this. And it goes past that water on both sides, and it's just gravel.
Before 1972, we didn't have any zoning in the county, so some of these entrances.
There's a more important thing that is these entrances, this is the primary highway, and these entrances are subject to a permit from VDOT. There are two basic kinds of permits that VDOT can grant. One is what's called private entrance, and that's really for single residents or farms, something like that. And the other is commercial entrance. This one would clearly be required to be a commercial entrance. VDOT has standards for both of those, and the commercial entrance has higher standards. So the site distance, conceivably, certainly the width of the entrance that might be adequate for a single family might very well not be adequate for a commercial. And you don't have any authority to waive that or to vary it or anything else. That's specifically provided by statute for VDOT. I will say that if it does meet VDOT standards, I think it would be difficult for you to say that it's consistent with the public health safety program.
And I'd like to add that they're not, if you don't meet VDOT requirements, they won't get a site plan through.
Have you been in contact with
VDOT?
Should they
have
said that
the
entrance was adequate?
They have a
carrier
of
fibers.
Yes.
You know,
Mr. Wood,
like, he spoke to Mr. Wood on the 12th, and he made it, Mr. Wood made it clear that they don't have adequate site distance, so really need the correction. So he suggested 500 feet, clear distance either way. Clearly don't have that at the time. They would have to negotiate, I guess, with the neighbors to acquire those easements to make it comply with VDOT standards, of course, which would be able to sign off on the site.
And the commercial entrance usually has an apron that the sweep that goes in. It's asphalt before the gravel.
They could vary. There'd be sometimes there's a flare, sometimes
yes.
There's a
turn.
Sometimes in the turn lane, it's like the one by a church near your property. It's not a full lane, but it's a tape.
Okay.
It varies according to the perceived intensity of the use and the intensity of the use on the public road. Various things like that. I will tell you, this is a primary road, and VDOT tends to be stricter on primary roads than they do on secondary.
So VDOT has said that they won't sign off.
As it is now, they will not.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else have any other questions or go over the discussion? I have some major concerns, especially about the entrance. I do have concerns about pipe distance is not very good at all coming out of there. And it is making move with a lot of traffic. VDOT is very concerned about that. Anybody else have any questions or any more discussion? If not, do I have a motion on SUP 1507? You are here for the public hearing. Right. Would that be proper for them to abstain from voting on this issue?
You're probably abstain if he doesn't feel comfortable and he knows all the facts necessary to make the decision, that's certainly appropriate thing to do. If you read the minutes, for example, and feel comfortable with it, I think it's different. That's up to you if you think it's probably abstain.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question. If we were to defer it again and just say, like the highway department might be a moot point over all of this stuff that we're talking about, if you can't get 500 feet, could we just defer it and say, to give him time to see if he can get 500 feet? If he can't get 500 feet, then that's a moot point.
Well, I think it's up to the applicant to prove the. I have always said it's up to the applicant to prove that his ask for special use permit, the special use permit, is consistent with the standards of the ordinance and the public safety, et cetera. I'm sensing from the comments and the questions asked by the commission that you think he had done that at this point. And I think there's three things you can do. One is you can defer it, but you can only defer it for a limited period of time, except at the applicant's request. The second thing you can do is recommend denial, and if your decision, of course, is not final, it's merely a recommendation to the board, and I think it would be a word in the wise to get that straight when we got to the board. And the third thing you can do is withdraw it and come back after you've ascertained whether this is there. If you will, that would give him an opportunity to use the vernacular, get his ducks in a row so you have a clean decision. I think it would be difficult on the state of this evidence to defend a decision that this was consistent with public safety and welfare.
Mr. Stewart, if the applicant were to withdraw, would he have to initiate a new? So he would have
yes.
To spend some time all over
again?
Could we go back to the applicant and see if he wants to keep it in an action status or he wants to withdraw it? Can you do that?
If the applicant asked for a deferral, how long of deferral could he ask for?
The applicant asked for it if tolls the time. If tolls the time. time period, I mean, anytime we want.
Okay. And if he withdraws the application, then he'd have to come back with a new application.
Right. The problem is, I don't know what the applicant's plans are, or status is, or anything else, but presumably there's going to be some clock ticks and money heads up. I don't know how the applicant feels about that. Those were out there, see, as the three alternatives.
What legal document would we require to, I think I saw somewhere up down the board that the 500 would be determined by a surveyor, is that right?
Yes, it's determined by VDOT.
By VDOT, okay. So in other words, they would give us documentation that he gets satisfied that.
What's happened here is that you frequently rely on VDOT's expertise, particularly with respect to public roads. And the quite proper, so, I think what Mr. Wood has said is we've looked at it and it doesn't have adequate site distance in our opinion. We want to get it surveyed and establish it, that fact does, and then we'll reconsider it. VDOT, I think it would tell you that, and I don't want to put words in Mr. Wood's mouth, but I think what it would tell you is we're not making a decision as to whether we grant a permit, because no permit's been asked yet at this point. But we can tell you that we believe that if all things are equal and an application were made, we would defer.
Mr. Dolphin, do you would you like to defer?
I'd like to defer. For one, we only had 2 weeks ago we were here. We had a very limited time frame. You know, go in and get the paperwork in the courthouse one day, go home to see my family, go back to work. You know, in 2 weeks went by very quickly. We're back here again. But it was really not enough time to get too much time in that. And they're working on a very big project down there, and I can't just run into him and say, okay, what's this? Is there some unanswered questions? Getting Mr. Wood was very difficult. He's been very, very busy. So, you know, I'm not giving excuses myself. I'm trying to get you to understand. I was against a very steep hill here for the last 2 weeks. Gave me a package to questions answer. And I had very limited time to do it. Deferring it, I think, is the best thing to do right now. And I know what I have to achieve, what I've got to do. And as far as the frontage goes, as far as the road going to the back, is there any paperwork that you're requiring on that? Okay, we had two different issues here. We had Ms. James Musselman, and then we had the frontage on the front of the property. So the one with the back, that's answered. I just have to deal with front now.
I don't want the applicant to be misled, but I hear the commission saying if you don't have enough information, correct me, I don't want the words in your mouth, if you don't have enough information that would permit you to recommend approval because of this entrance problem. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't other problems that might mean that you wouldn't recommend approval. So, I don't want the applicant to get the idea that if he says, I want to defer it, that he's going to solve this site distance problem. He goes and spends money on a surveyor, gets a survey, convinces VDOT that the site distance is there. I don't want him to have the impression that that's the end of the matter, but you still have discretion as to whether making the determination that the ordinance requires consistent with the character in the neighborhood and that, all those other questions.
You do know on that piece of muslin the property, on that particular right of way, you were responsible for all maintenance on that?
Yes, I understand. I understood that, I should say, sorry.
Okay. Mr. Johnson has expressed his desire to defer.
Well, you don't need to worry about the conditions.
got, we got a couple things to get. Snow weather coming, I got, you know, I have some holidays coming, so, you know. February 19th? Okay, finally, I don't know if we're leaving the 19th. Finally, we have a whole month of lizards in here in Champion Park.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Goff is a little discursive here. The question is, does he have a date that he wants to put on? And I don't think the reason for it, he may have good reasons or he has some bad reasons or whatever, but whatever date he says, I think we should consider.
Do you have a date?
I was gonna say March 1st.
Okay, well, you have to defer it to a
regular. You do it to your regular meeting.
Regular meeting in March.
Right.
Which will be the fourth Wednesday in March.
Okay.
Be February 25th.
You want to do the last meeting?
Last meeting in March. March.
Oh, March.
March. That would be March.
March 25th. But because it's leap year and you're gonna move up the day, so that's for
March 23rd.
March 23rd.
The 2016 is March 23rd.
Yes.
Yes.
Adopted in 2010, and this is our 5-year update. This document, really, the main intention of it is an inventory of the transportation deficiencies in the region and the rural part of the region, excluding the urbanized area of Charlottesville and the inner ring of Albemarle County. It identifies what are the real needs, what are the deficiencies, what are the strengths in each one of the localities in terms of their transportation systems. I know that, you know, there's been a lot of changes going on the state level with transportation. There's been some recent legislation that's really going to change how transportation projects are funded. This is the first year we're really using it. Basically, to wrap it all into a quick synopsis, localities are going to have a lot more detail on projects when they submit it to get funding. In the past, localities could submit projects annually to get considered for funding. Sometimes those projects didn't have to be really well thought out. It's basically just, we need to improve this roadway, please consider this with funding to come up with a plan. Now the state's requiring that localities develop a plan on the front end before you even submit to apply to get funding. It's going to be, you know, it's a good process. I think the state's heading in the right direction. It's going to be a challenge as well as localities try to figure out what are our needs, how do we get the data, how do we really justify these projects. We think that the long-range transportation plan is going to be a great tool for doing that. We have already been talking to the state. The state also feels like these plans are going to be critical in that process. And before, while it was an important document, it feeds into the state's transportation plan. It's supposed to inform you on what the transportation needs are. It hadn't really had as much weight, but now this new process is in place. This is going to be a very important document. So why are we coming to you right now to talk to you about this? We just started, actually, to update this document. We wanted to just tell you what we were doing, give you kind of a primer, because we're going to come back to you and give more presentations to you, get your feedback of what your needs are in terms of transportation. We start, like I said, Nick Morrison. He's currently developing our first needs assessment for the region, doing a needs assessment on safety. So we're looking at all the accidents around the region, including Louisiana County, on traffic, on economic development, how transportation in our areas can support economic development, what environmental impacts, it's going to be less of an emphasis in rural areas. And also what other services, John, down here in the Ravana, you all have parks and trails. How does that feed into your needs as well? We're going to come back to you. We want to get your feedback. But again, this is just a primer just to let you know what we're working on. That's really all I had. If you had any questions right now, I'd be happy to take those. If you wanted to communicate any immediate transportation issues that you've had in the county, we'd love to hear that as well. Right. That's a great question. It does fit into that. What it will do is, what the current plan is intended to do, is show you what the transportation needs are in your county. Lots of times, you get anecdotal information of where the safety hotspots are, for instance. This is really an analytical data process that highlights, this is actually a ranking of the biggest safety issues. So it's intended to help you make decisions on what projects to move forward and to apply for funding. Like I said, with the changes on the state level, with the six-year improvement program, you're going to need a lot more work and a lot more data at the front end now. They're not going to accept your project unless you really do that work. This document will help give you the data and the information that you need to submit those projects and to submit them successfully. So it's really intended to help you select what projects should be submitted, and also once you've made that selection, to give you the data so that you're hopefully be more successful with actually securing those funds. For the state,
in whatever category, allocated
funds for the local projects.
Okay. and then, you know, it depends on what document
you're trying to get. I know recently that there were like four different projects that have been on county that got federal funding. Did y'all come up with that to acquire that for them? Or do you help counties also get federal funding as well as state funding?
We did help them with that. It's a little bit different situation in the urban area of Albemarle County in the city of Charlottesville. That area is called the Metropolitan Planning Organization, a federally designated overlay on those localities. That designation actually allows those localities to qualify for federal funding. Unfortunately, Flavanna County, Louisa, Nelson Green, and the outside ring of Albemarle County is not in the MPO, so it doesn't actually qualify for federal funding. So that's kind of the challenge. State funds are limited, and I know this year for the six-year improvement program, localities statewide submitted $7 billion worth of transportation projects. We had $1.2 billion that were available. A lot of projects submitted. A lot of projects are not going to get built. That's what our intention is, to help supply our localities and support them, kind of give us that cutting edge, and they give us that extra inch as we're applying to these funds.
You said that the localities themselves will have to be more sophisticated in their requests. Small counties don't necessarily have that expertise, so in the state, and would certainly know more about. So why would the state want Flavanna County to be more than say, do you think this is a dangerous intersection? Would you take a look at it?
Mm-hmm.
So what's changing then?
Sure. Well, the real change, I guess without getting into too much detail, is there are a few projects around the state. One of them is 460 in Southeast Virginia. You might have heard about it. In Charlottesville, there's a project called the Western Bypass that you might have heard about as well. There's several other projects where projects kind of moved through the system, and there was a lot of political support for it. In Virginia, the governor, you can't run for consecutive terms. So there's a lot of instability. So what the state did is to try to make it more of an analytical, to make sure the right projects get funding and that we're more effective and efficient with their funding decisions. That this new process is really focused on an analytical and data-driven process. So the state really, when localities submit their projects now, they're going to take those projects and put them in a list, run phase of analytics and calculations to rank those projects.
State does that.
And then the state will make their decisions based on how those projects are ranked. Either within these smaller districts that VDOT has designated, or statewide. There are different pots of money. So where the localities need to get more sophisticated is, you won't be able to submit kind of just the feel-good projects if the project doesn't make sense in the numbers. It's going to be very competitive. Projects have to score well in their process. And part of the sophistication of that is sometimes how you define the project boundaries. There might be an intersection project that's really important, and that's a safety and efficiency. We have to think about, how is the state going to prioritize this? How are the calculations going to be done? Because it could be, if we link that intersection by itself, it might not score very well. But if we link it to some corridor project that it's part of, it might score better. So those are the types of processes we're trying to think through as we update this. Is look at these projects, how are they prioritized as we run through this? We would do all these prioritizations for you as part of what we do. We get funding from VDOT through the feds so that we provide these transportation services to our localities. Part of our core services. So what we plan on doing is running these calculations ourselves and basically telling you, this is your best bet of getting funding, and these are the areas that are kind of the hot spots, the real needs in your community. Certainly there are other needs that can't be captured in numbers and calculations, and we can take that into account as well.
Does the state take that into account, some of the hot spots? Because I'm just thinking there's probably not a road in Nevada that would probably rank as high as, let's say, Route 28 or Route 7 in Northern Virginia. So if that's who our competition is.
That's a great question. It's an excellent question. When they're doing these analytics on these projects, there's two layers to it. They score your projects, and then the great equalizer of all this is we take the state takes the cost of that project, and the final ranking, very final ranking, is what is the benefit per dollar. So there might be a project on Route 7 near Tyson's Corner. It's a great project, and it's going to have huge benefit. I guarantee that project's going to be really expensive when you get up there. We might have a project in Savannah County that provides great benefit, and it might be a lot cheaper. So when we go to the state, we say, this is our project. It might not be in Northern Virginia. It might not be a Route 7. It gives us the best bang for our buck. That's where we get really compelling, and that's where we can make really good arguments.
We have a new section, 618,
and
53, the Board of Supervisors thought was a dangerous enough to ask for a roundabout. And that was based on death and accidents. Mr. Morrison, Nick, he is in the process of doing a safety assessment, and that intersection, I believe, came up as a hot spot. So that's actually is a good selection for that project. I think there's a decent chance it'll score pretty well. I think they're already considering
it. But it would also help if they recommend it.
I could just answer, it's a really good question by Commissioner Gaines. I'm Chip Oils, the director of the PDC. Your question is the question every rural county has made. You know, our numbers, just when you're looking at congestion and even safety and a lot of others, they can't rank with some of the roads in Northern Virginia or Hampton Roads. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, though, because there are, with House Bill 2 funding, there are two pots of money. There's the state pot that everybody competes against with the rating system that Will was talking about. But then each construction district across the state has their own pot. And so in this case, for some of the projects in Fluvanna, you're only competing against the rest of the Culpeper district. So you're not having to compete with Hampton Roads or Norfolk or Northern Virginia. And hopefully the needs will be a whole lot more similar across our district than they are in the more urban areas.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions?
more questions, or would you like to highlight any specific hot spots for you?
Thank you.
Thank you. We really appreciate you all having us in the committee on the agenda. If you have any questions, Jason has our contact information. Please contact us if you'd like to know more, if you want to provide more input. We do intend on being back. We're going to bring more information next time. We're going to keep coming to you with this. And also, Jason's he's part of the rural technical committee as director of planning, and we have a meeting tomorrow. So if you have anything to forward to him, he can get a test for him.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. The next item is the CIP discussion. I think we need to try to discuss and rank. Is that right?
Sure. That's correct. Just a bit. Talked about that at a work session last month. And we are pretty good in October. Yes, the department heads here. If you have any additional questions, but tonight we need to go through and rank the projects. Preparation for the public hearing next month.
Should we go straight down the line and do the ranking, or if we have some specific questions, should we get those done before we go to the ranking, or do them as we go?
It's completely up to you, Nate.
Which way would y'all like to go? Just go down through the list, and then as we get to the project, we have first item is countywide building assessment. And, myself, I think that that's something that we need to do. We have proved that is an ongoing thing in the past. And I do think that should rank as the one. The next item is the county and school administration building. Myself, I can't figure out how I would rank that, because I can't figure out how it's really in planning yet. So I don't know what the rest of y'all, I do see where they're doing remodels and so forth. If some of the buildings that actually would end up in this building. So I think this is something that my thinking that the board of supervisors really need to look at this in conjunction with these repairs.
In this year's CIP, the school board office renovations is 1.5 million, and then in just 4 years, they've invested 11 million. And, you know, we're thinking of investing 11 million in the building. Is it more than just a school board, but an intended school?
know that we did that on another item, which I'm going to talk about later, but I think maybe that the board of supervisors really needs to look at all of these projects in conjunction, and it's kind of hard for us to make the recommendation to have a rank on these projects, not knowing what else. Okay, we're just going to go past that one and go on now, come back to that later. Next item is the Parks and Recreation and Community Services. First item is a PG picnic shelter near the ball field. That's rank of one. There's four projects there in that same area that is rank of one. Now the Farm Museum, of course, is basically going to be public money and so forth. That's $10,000. And I know we're really not supposed to consider money, but sometimes that happens. Do you think that these four projects should be ranked in one?
Encourage us to do something, at least something, to
Correct.
That's correct.
And I understand too, that I know we can't, and I really don't like to discuss the money part. We're supposed to be already discussing the planning, what, you know, like this, and no part for us not to. And I eventually see the fact that these stop. And I know they've got a bank down here, too, but these lighting for these fields, the amount of recreation activity that's happening in Pleasant Grove is, I'm, you know, thinking on that rank is two and so forth like that. Now, some of these others, I think that pavilion is going to replace something else or something like that. So I'm wondering if we should maybe rank the picnic shelter, the pavilion, and the museum at one, and maybe adjust out to two on some of the others.
It looks like the top two, picnic shelter and multi-function pavilion, have proper money associated with them.
Well, do you also look at this thing here? None of these projects are supposed to be out of borrowing. If I'm looking at them, all coming out of fund balance. Supposedly, and we can ask this question, does money hold a possibility in the fund balance to take care of it? Because showing on the fund balance, there's not a borrowing for cash in any project I see for this coming year.
But the water is so high also under there.
Well,
so I'm sure we don't have that in our fund balance.
Well, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask some questions about that when we get down there too. So, you know, it's up to y'all, but I think that, you know, the recreation and I know a lot of kids that are involved in the recreation there at Pleasant Grove, so I do see the need for us to have activities for the children of that. I know that this speaker has suggested we do the fall heritage that we won.
Is the proper money cover the entire cost?
The proper money would not cover the
provision of the two.
Yeah, sure.
And then we're going to the next item is the cost of trail development. You want to change that to a three?
Yes, ma'am. That was the last one. Correct.
Is that part of that property would pay the exchange?
With the Lake Monsoon property?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
What do y'all think? Do you think it's a three? Okay. Because we've already decided that one on the heritage, right? Then there's another picnic shelter, which is ranked as a two near existing shelter.
That's essentially going to replace the old one.
Yes, sir.
If this property line is the same development.
Yes.
Is that property?
Do you want to leave that as you have it as two? Now, these two athletic fields are, they originally we were developing four back when we got the dirt from when they were doing the school and so forth like that and so forth like that.
So the,
part
yes.
Part of that original project?
Yes. So in 2010, we had a rec master plan done. And the need was for additional fields throughout the county. So this essentially would complete that area of the park as far as field space.
How many fields do we have now?
Two at Pleasant Grove and then two at Carriage Brook. Okay. Baseball and softball.
Okay. When the Little Leagues play, are you playing on more than two fields?
The Lions Club also has a field to take by the avenue of charity.
I believe the Youth Baseball Association owns that.
Now, how does it, do they lease those fields or do they just use them? Or what is
for the county, from Parks and Rec?
Yes.
They, so we have a per child fee. It's $3, I believe, per head, per season. And that's all the revenue that we get. The only revenue.
Two baseball fields.
Two baseball and two softball. The one, just to give you a quick example, the one with the light, the only the field that we have is at Carriage Brook, the big softball field. And we have to each fall coordinate with our youth football teams and softball league when they can have batting practice and when they can't. They don't hit the football players when they hit the softball.
What about the field at the middle school? Is that lighted and is that used by recreation also?
I believe the youth football teams currently use that field.
What is the baseball field?
With the football. Okay, so the football, the lighted football field and the lighted baseball field.
The baseball field is basically
behind the school.
Behind the ball.
I know for a fact they use the football field. I'm not sure if they use the
baseball. I know that the senior baseball that used to use that and play that field up in the community with school.
There's a difference.
We have a contract with the school for use of the field there also.
We do. The county has a new OU that is probably 5 or 6 years old.
But you know, will it light it or not?
The baseball field?
Yeah.
Yes. They are. So if we have a program we can use in schools and we don't have to pay a fee. If a youth league in the county wants to use a lighted field and our field's not available, they have to go to the school and pay the school.
They don't mind that.
Sure they do. I think the school fee is a little bit more because you have to pay a staff to be out there.
I think we should still get that to playground expansion, and that's a Pleasant Grove, right?
Yes, sir. So the playground expansion basically doubled the size of the playground that we have.
Is, I see it's ranked as a two. Do we have an overuse of the playground that we have now?
At most times, yes, we do. And this would also add an older group level. So we would not only expand the playground for additional equipment, but we would also offer ages 5 to 12 equipment.
The, so we're going to leave that at 2? Now, the next item is the athletic field lighting that I talked about earlier, because I think that we've had that on the plan for quite a few years. I know that one time they were talking about that one of the companies that supplies lighting would give a partial grant. You know what I'm talking about?
Musco Lighting?
Yeah. I mean, that was part of the presentation we had with that.
They do have grants available, but I mean, it's got every other portion I can say also apply. So it's competitive. I'm not saying we can't obtain a grant. It's just a matter of, I'd rather ask for the full price than say we can take half of it because we're
here. Yeah, I mean, I'm just asking the question.
Yeah. Okay.
It was given to us in the presentation. And so
it's possible.
Do you want to leave that as a two? Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any objections to that?
I was just wondering, why you got to do four fields at one time? You're talking about over $500,000. Why not do a couple of fields this year and a couple of next year? Spread it in the budget. It's going to go $650,000 at one time.
I think the way that it was explained before, that over the actual project, it would be a whole lot cheaper to do it all at one time. Because of the, some of the lighting from one field may be actually partially be on to another. That was...
Okay. You're right.
I guess I'm just used to stretchy dollars, you know.
Season, say March, April, you can't start a game until about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Because you just can't get people there. They're coming from work, they're coming to school and things like that. So if you start a game at say 5:30, even a little league game where you're going six innings, it's probably gonna be at least 7. That'll be a real short game, an hour and a half. It's going to be at least 7 before you finish. And early in the season, it's too dark to play. So you might get 6 innings, but the last inning would be tough. And really, it's obviously the best quality game, but also it's dangerous.
And this is 4 days a week that you play tonight in the park?
It depends on how big the leagues are. I want to say right now it's probably 5 days a week. It's also an opportunity to bring in sports tourism. You know, the city of Shawsport has a huge softball co-ed league.
If you brought in tourists and they were playing later at night, the like
after and the youth are done with their league.
There are a lot of terms required. If you don't have lights, you're just not eligible to do it. Sure. I never played Little League. When I was playing Little League, we never had money. But I'll tell you that there's one field in Charleston that's got lights. That's Magnetite. Mm-hmm. It's my home league. The other leagues don't have lights. And I've had plenty of games on both of them where it really affected the game. It was...
Yeah, I understand for adults, but...
No, I'm talking about
children.
It's not kidding. No, we're not talking about keeping them up until 11 o'clock at midnight. We're talking about 7:30.
Well, they get dusty dark. It's a little bit of a problem. Do we have any adult softball or anything like that? I know that's big in Charlottesville, not far from places like that.
Not currently. No, we don't.
Is that something that we would possibly have later on for all these fields designed for lower ages?
They're designed, they can be designed for older ages with while allowing youth to participate.
I've noticed some fields that they have an actual outfield fence further back in the season, they have put a shorter fence there for you, but with the possibility of expanding later on.
That's what the softball league carried for in the spring.
I've actually played on a field that was used for softball, slowly used kids, and had to learn that. It's not only the fence back, but you have to have a very flat mound to do that. But you have to skin into it. But it can be done. And it's not, you know, it's not bad. It's not ideal.
When we had the field at Fremont down at Dominion Power, I think 4 or 5 years ago was the last time we had a golf softball league. So there's interest. It's just a matter of having fields.
And the next 2 years is Fremont Growth because of the Ashmont's and work that they're doing down there?
Sounds like for at least another year. Next fall, at least.
I would recommend we leave it at 2. If y'all want to go a higher grade, that's fine. I can go along with that, but I think this is because it's been on the agenda for a number of years. Does anybody have any objections to that?
Do we need to be up to 18 and 19 also, too?
I thought we already did.
I thought
we left them at 2, so yeah.
I
agree with that. I do, for the fact that I just want to mention, and actually it's a lot of money, but that multi-generational thing has been on the agenda for about as long as I can remember.
Where would that be? Would you ever plan for where that would be?
That would be at the County Avenue Complex, where the library is.
Is there not there 4 buildings there?
I believe so.
That's it.
6 buildings?
I think we should leave it where it is, but I mean, I just wanted to mention the fact that I would recommend, like whoever says that we leave it up to the outline project. The next item is design and construct the JRWA water system intake structure. I do know that recently we voted about that, although I've heard lately that we might not have had all the information we should have had, but that's another.
our share was much higher?
Yes, 2.75 is our.
And that 2.75 is already 2.5. That's what we're having. So the total is 5, which is half of 10, which is.
Yeah, what I'm asking.
So you add.
10 is the current, yeah, you definitely add two together. What they're recommending is 2.250, because that 2.750 has already been done, right?
Yes, sir. I believe that was approved in either 15 or 16.
Are we borrowing this money, or do we have it?
Well,
Where is it?
TRWA.
I don't think that decision has been taken.
TRWA is, it's being funded by TRWA. We fund TRWA by various combination.
But the, our $2,250 will cover the fund balance according to the paperwork here. Is that correct?
I don't know. I mean, it hasn't been decided yet. Some of this stuff can come from fund balance. Some of it is probably going to be borrowed. I don't know whether the board is going to decide to borrow for this project or whether they're going to decide to borrow for the Sign Crossroads project or both. But that's why they're currently just listed as being cash funded.
Can we
going to be some kind of a financing plan for it.
Since you mentioned that, the one at, I want to kind of skip down to where the Zion Crossroads thing is that what the board voted on a couple of weeks ago already to fund that? I know we have $4,650,000 that they was previously funded. I think it actually money that came out of the 911 funding, but and then that $6 million, is that the what did the board supervisor just so we can do with another?
No, sir.
They voted to fund the design.
They voted to fund the final design, which is right around $500,000, give or take.
Okay.
There's a potential stop. The board said several different spots along this, but to stop that after preliminary engineering report, or just move on to final design. We'll go to final design at that point. But this, you keep remember we're talking about that one second. It starts in July of next year, so we expect the design to be finished on about April or May of next year, and we may very well be ready to go to construction. But if we're not today, go to construction fairly early in the fiscal year, for 2017.
Actually, here's the thing. All but one of us voted to approve this. So myself, although I have some situations about what some of this stuff is done, I don't see how I can change because we've already basically approved it, and it is part of the comprehensive plan also.
And I think from a strictly humanities aspect, forgetting about the money from that, because that's really more important to provide some responsibility for the money where it comes from. From a strictly planning aspect, the reason I voted for it is I think water designs crossroads is important. We need to do that somehow. And how that gets done, this is obviously one pretty viable alternative. So from planning side, I think our vote for it was still good on that. The money side, which should be the board supervisor's responsibility, I think that's their decision to make. That's a good issue. And I'm thinking about tonight when we talk about what's good for the
The Negro has to look at that from a different perspective. It's a few months.
It's a responsibility come January.
But when the $10,650,000, is that for both water systems, or is that just for the one coming from the present? It's under.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Number 33, design and construct water sewer system for Chuck Sands Crossroads.
comes from makes no difference whatsoever. I mean, the booster station is being constructed to take Department of Corrections water down to Zion Crossroads. But the overwhelming majority of the projects, you could add water in from any source that you want to. There are water lines that can carry water.
But the difference is the water them. Line is it's going to come from the Department of Corrections there on the west side of 15. They're coming the other way down the east side of 15. You're saying that this is coming from the west.
The project runs a water line from the correction facility basically to the intersection of 250 and 15, only, of course, staying in our county. And then I believe it calls for to go about a half a mile down 15. So it spans roughly half the distance or half the breadth of the Zion Crossroads CPA.
And it also, does it include both the water tower also?
It includes a 500-gallon water storage tank and as I said, a booster facility down at DOC. That's actually the only part of the project that is exclusive to the Department of Corrections deal, because that pumps water from the Department of Corrections into the system.
But just to be clear, I think the answer to this question is not building anything towards Department of Corrections.
No, it's staying completely within Blue Valley County.
Louisa
is building the stuff.
Right, so the only water source I'm aware of that comes from the west at the moment is the corrections. Right? I mean, you're saying it could be from anywhere, but what's on plan?
Yes, but there's going to be an interconnection with the Louisa water system at basically at the intersection of 250 and 15, and when we're ready to get water from Louisa, we will be able to.
Right.
They're going to bring a line all the way. Okay.
There's nothing else, but in other words, there's nothing we need to do to get water from Louisa other than at some point in time open up a valve and have them start reading the meter.
I understand.
In other words, you're running a line up to and meet where they're going to run up their line to the Louisa County.
There is already a line stubbed out at the county line. These are pointing at Blueberry County. And their plan would be to connect to that with a closed system.
It's not that we were never aware of it overnight.
Okay.
Did y'all know that before tonight?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. That gives us a better idea. I'm going to recommend that we leave that as a warning. Did we actually skip over the JRW day one, or did we decide that was the one also? Because we jumped over and started talking about that.
I thought we were on the JRW.
Okay.
That's
you
what
said.
Well, in my opinion, we need to leave both of them. I never have understood why we didn't do this thing about the library and public safety, potable water at the time we built the buildings, but now that they have to drink out bottled water, although it's a kind of a complicated issue, isn't it? The water is okay, but it's not.
Water is fine, it's just not legally,
legally
standards. This plant, that project basically just ties the two systems together so that both wells can serve both buildings. You can actually have a well down if you need to, and then we'll be getting a non-community, non-transient water system permit from the health department, which requires certain monitoring and testing every month. So basically, And this is one that I believe came within last year's, but I believe it got pushed. It was originally into the FY16, but it just got pushed into 17.
I approved it because we talked about last year, the fact that, so it got pushed out.
I think the money just got pushed into 17, but it has been discussed before.
And of course, I think that the fire detection alarm system needs to stay at one, because I think that's something that the safety situation is.
Because I know we're only in a situation where we're forced to do something with the courthouse system, because as things sometimes do, this, the system in the courthouse has become, it's becoming obsolete. The other two, the Paul Meyer Fire Station and the Kent Store Fire Station, there was never a system put in when they were constructed. I'm not sure why they were before my time. But the Fort Union Fire Station does have a monitor fire detection alarm system in it. And as you can see, we're looking at about an additional $1,500 to add the two fire stations onto our list of facilities that are monitored. The courthouse is already monitored, so that the cook would little to an increase in the annual cost there.
I think that we're probably all in agreement that that needs to be done if you have. The next item is the treasure rebuilding upgrade. Is this basically upgrading the electrical system, or is it other items too? I understand that the electrical system there is old type fuses and the wiring is the old cloth wiring in the walls.
Throughout substantial large portions of the building, yes. There is some more modern wiring in the sheriff's office. Upstairs, the old part of the treasurer's office. I'm not sure if you know there's a building there that was too quick to be constructed at one more time. This is something that's been in the CIP for, since the first CIP that I did, for 2013, it's just continuing to get pushed out.
Bringing this screen up. Bringing this screen up.
We're basically asking, it's still sitting at about $1 million, we're asking for $250,000 in FY17. Well, planning on trying to do some lighting improvements similar to what we've done over in the admin building. I think we've got new ceilings mentioned in there, although I'm kind of partial to those high ceilings in the building myself. I'm not sure that I want to do a bunch of rock ceilings with grids in such a nice old building. But basically, we plan on doing something to stick it up and work the lighting so we can see. That would be complete the whole building HVAC system to serve.
And then you keep that building?
Well, that's an interesting question, because that's something that I've seen a master plan, if you will, that's brought about at some point in time in the past, probably 2005 or 6. Calls for municipal building to be built out there in the same area where the sheriff's building and the library are. But clearly there's never been any real movement on it. And I think Mr. Gibb was making some very salient points earlier when he was saying that it's probably time perhaps for the board, or maybe the planning commission and the board, to work up something as a path forward. There's arguments to be made for keeping the old buildings, doing whatever renovations are necessary to them, keeping them up. courts need to expand, they're going to need more space. So a logical thing would be if county administration or school administration was moving to a new facility out of the municipal complex off of Route 53 in Pleasant Grove, to turn this admin building, the old admin building, over to court services, and perhaps the Commonwealth's attorney and the probation officer who's currently in the treasurer's office, the other probation officer who's currently in the T-Square Frederick building, can get them all near the courthouse. But again, that's something that probably needs to be discussed, perhaps old plans dusted off and at least looked at, and come up with a plan of attack, because we do have quite a few older buildings, and the older buildings are definitely more expensive to operate and maintain than newer modern buildings. Newer modern buildings are expensive to build, so one way or the other, you can pay some money. But it's a matter of planning for the county's future, I think.
You know, my thinking is we need to leave that treasury building upgrade that's basically a lot to do with the electrical system. We looked at that before, and I'm very concerned about the fact that the safety aspect of that, these further projects further out. And of course, they may decide that they want to do stopgap measures, and I don't know what you think about that, because you know more about that type of thing than we do. I've seen that, and they talked about it, and seen that electrical system there that's, I don't know how many years old, but some of that wiring.
Well, the building was early 20th century. I don't know exactly when. Probably like 1930s or something.
Well, I think the treasury.
That's probably how old some of the wiring is.
The right hand side of that building used to be the clerk's office. Like that.
I think the entire county administration, Commissioner of Revenue, Treasurer, and clerk all used to be in that building.
Yeah, we'll just have to go back to the back on the right hand side.
Commissioner, the treasurer, and the county administrator are all on the left side.
On the left side.
Clerk's on the
right. Yeah.
I mean, you do bring up some excellent points, because we've got several, you know, facility upgrade and renovation projects that are in the CIP. Basically, working those in, some of those get out of the maintenance repair replacement stuff, but I put them in the assumption that we're going to need to stay in those buildings.
Yeah. Well,
if for some reason there is a plan afoot with a date certain by which we're going to try to get started on the new county municipal facility, that may restack the deck as far as exactly what you're going to do with some of these buildings. But you got to keep Bruce awake, and you got to keep the electrical system safe, you got to keep the HVAC systems running, things like that. But as far as new flooring and things like that, if you know you're going to be moving out of the building and perhaps selling it, then that would be something that you would consider.
My thinking on some of this, and I don't know whether y'all agree or not, that we should make a recommendation that the board of supervisors, in looking at the CIP, discuss whether we want to build a new school board, county administration, treasurer's office, and whether we want to the other projects, to put them on a different path. If that's going to happen in the future. But I think that's something that it's hard for me to make a recommendation one way or the other when I'm hearing that we may build this building, but yeah, we're going to build $1.5 million here, $1 million here, and so forth, and then possibly, and it really bothered me when they talked about building $1.5 million on a building and possibly tearing it down. It was actually more than $1.5 million because you got other things. So that kind of bothers me. I think that we should make a recommendation to utilizes in the CIP that we don't really know which one of these projects is going to CIP because of the fact that we don't know what's going to happen going forward. I don't know whether y'all disagree with me what I'm saying.
Well, we would have that information if we had that countywide government assessment before we finish this.
Well, not necessarily, because you've got to also have the information of whether the board supervisors thinks from the necessity of building this administration building. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that the board supervisors has actually had a in-depth discussion. I think maybe they've had more than 4 or 5 minutes discussion about it. From what I understand.
Pretty sure there hasn't been an in-depth discussion in at least the last 3 years. So
it just to me that like to me you're gonna throw $1.5 million over your shoulder and then you're gonna build something else and then just follow me. You know, it's hard for me to make a ranking recommendation when not knowing what the actual plans are.
Maybe we should tell them this should say that in the collection of the account office whether they're going to do some of the other stuff, consider all that as a package.
Kind of if then situation.
I don't know what they're going to do.
I don't think it should all be considered as one package.
Right. That's an optimal assumption.
Like proper well casing is supposed to be.
false serves, and then they dug 300 feet and got no water and moved to a place about 70 feet away and got, at 70 feet, they would get 7 gallons.
Well, that was my original theory on what was going on with that well, but once I found out that that rock's at 80 feet there, other spots around Pleasant Road tends to be around 40, so it's just typical well casing, you kind of assume that it's down in the bedrock, but this is up on the hill there, it's a little bit deeper. In any case,
you need water there.
We need some water. This project, though, is actually, for the most part, run water lines. And it is predicated on coming to a deal with the county schools on the county continuing to take over utilities-based facilities from the schools so they can concentrate more on schools-based facilities. I don't think the cost is going to go up enormously if the county were to not be able to use the high school or treatment facility as its basis for this, but it will still certainly help. As you can see, phase one does call for constructing water lines from the booster station at the high school to basically encompassing everything that is currently served by that contaminated well, the yard hiders, Pleasant Grove House, and then the Comfort Station. However, if we do find another 12, 15 gallon well fairly close to the house, then the need for, at least the immediate need for connecting to the school system would be alleviated.
And that rank the two.
Well, yes, sir. I have to rank some of this too. I'd very much like to do this, but I understand that the money is limited.
So you'd like to rank them all with one plus, right?
Yes, sir. In all honesty, of the five projects that you see there under the Public Works CIPs, this is probably the lowest priority one.
Who we should be encouraging those two? Basically, that's your way of life.
Thank you.
I think the next item is D911, computer aided dispatch record management system. And I think the sheriff, a lot of people have explained that a lot to us about what that's did. And I really think that that would be advantageous to the county. I know with them going to the new D911 system, being able to communicate it, not part of the county, hopefully soon, and stuff like that. But being able to automatically put these records in right away, I just think that's a really worthwhile project to put up into to being able to get the information we need immediately and also get it to the sheriff's department. To the sheriff's department. Because the deputies will be able to input information and it will be going to go right straight to the system. And if it's something that they need to be on alert about, it will come straight back to the
system. Even if we get our Wi-Fi up to where it should be, they actually, when you drive into the premises of the building, it will automatically download everything into the system. Like they have in Alamo and City Shawls and stuff like that.
I couldn't understand what y'all talking about. At the sheriff's department, you only had five, and it's CenturyLink, and I can get 10 of my
house. I have like 20, I think.
Yeah.
it's pretty sad. We've been trying to work on
the computer system. I don't know how in the world. How y'all
doing? Works slow.
I reckon it's other than dialogue.
Yeah. We're one step up from there.
But I think we should leave that at one.
That's I'm not sure.
Okay. Next is fire and rescue. First item is Fluvanna Fire and Rescue Personal Protective Equipment Replacement. I see that's at $410,000, but it's just odd to me that when you jump to 2018, it drops down to $60,000, and then all of a sudden it goes sky high the following year. That was just odd-looking thing I was looking at.
Yeah, part of the reason for that is that because of the way the apparatus is titled between the county agencies and Lake Monticello. So the county agencies come out of the CIP because they're titled and owned by the county. The money for the apparatus that runs out of Lake Monticello is owned and titled by Lake Monticello, and therefore it comes out of the budget request rather than the CIP. So if you look at the total requests, it's fairly flat, but they come out of different requests. I hope that makes sense. I hope that's clear. So this part looks like it'll jump up and down, but if you look at the request in the budget, it'll be the sawtooth will be the other way around.
Y'all think we should leave that on one? Okay, the next item is the thermal imaging camera replacement. Is this the 2017 and 2018, the final 2 years of that?
Yes.
Did they do some of that previously?
No.
This is the new.
This is the new ones. This is replacing the ones that were purchased in 6 or 8 years ago. I don't remember the exact time. So these are replacing the ones that have been deployed.
Plus the newer.
And it's newer technology. And with anything electronic, the technology moves forward pretty rapidly.
Well, I was going to replace it. Self-contained breathing apparatus replacement. It's ranked as a one, but what surprises me, ranked as a one, but it's way out of 2019.
Right. This is for planning purposes, and we're not actually requesting money at this point. I don't really need to worry too much about it. This is anticipating the future requests.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it confuses us when you rank things like that and you've got things out in future years. In other words, when I see ranking, it's just immediate,
right.
Yeah, so that's okay. That's what kind of follows me in that respect. It's out 3 years, right? We could. Let's make it a three, and then if we decide we need to bring it up to a higher ranking, we'll do it.
Okay.
Since it is out, three.
Sure, that makes sense. So, toughbooks are the mobile computers that we carry on the apparatus. They're basically military spec computers, so that when we run into the house and drop them down the stairs, they survive. It's what we use for collecting the information for our call reports, patient information, writing up the narratives, that sort of thing. And they lead a pretty hard life.
It doesn't carry a piece of paper.
Is that just one book?
No, that's replacing, I believe it was six of them. There was some confusion originally. We were going to try and replace a bunch of them using refurbished ones, and we changed the number because we assumed, after doing an inventory, we think we can reuse some of the need to be replaced.
Did you have like a can thing?
Yeah.
You changed it to a five to actually get five?
To get new ones instead of refurbished ones, and then continue to reuse the ones that are still serviceable. I think we'll get more. Better bang for our buck that way.
Excuse me. Okay. Next item is the RDF chief vehicle. I think you talked a little bit about that before and so forth like that. Do we ever get, and I know the police department and so forth around here have gotten donations of vehicles to use for things like that from different things.
There is some question, and that is still being debated as to exactly what that position will be. There has been a salary request put in for fiscal year 17 for that position. And the question now is this going to be purely an administrative position or an operational position? If it's going to be operational, where the person that fills that role is going to come out and run calls, they are going to need a vehicle that runs like some tires so they can get there. If it's purely administrative, that may be not so necessary.
Do you think that this will happen in 2017? Or, I see it ranked two, and I'm just one trying to figure out whether it's going to be in 2017 or 2018, or if it would be in 2017, ranked number two, and maybe have more information in several months when it goes to the Board of Supervisors.
Personal opinion, I think it's a better position. I don't think it's gonna, that position is gonna be filled at the beginning of fiscal year 17. Personal opinion is it'll probably be the fire risk association.
Because we're talking about 17, a year between, so.
Right, well, yeah. So my opinion is that it will be recommended by fiscal year 17, probably not at the beginning of fiscal year. Personal opinion. That's the best offer.
There's tomorrow on the website. I'm going to just approve. Yeah, to the website. Bills.
What do y'all think?
Yeah.
Is it okay. Next item is put by the fire rescue CPR assistant.
Yeah, basically they are a mechanical device that will do the compressions for CPR. If you've seen the video, or if you're certain CPR trained, you know that CPR is a very demanding, physically demanding task. And if you have a two-person crew, the provider can't do CPR and call on the radio and administer medications while the other person is driving. So it's very difficult to transport a person while doing CPR with a two-person crew. The career crew now are two-person crews. At Lake Monticello, they're often two-person crews. So if you do have somebody that requires CPR and transport, you're going to have to request somebody else's assistance. This can be a mechanical assistant to do that. We reduced the original request because the operational medical director for the career staff at this point does not want to use mechanical assist devices, so it would be just to staff the, or to equip the late units at this point. It would be the first and second due ambulances are responsible for the first year, and the remaining two ambulances the second year, so we split it up into two from that request.
At our church, we have people that took classes to do CPR, and we have some devices. I don't know exactly what they are, but they're all.
So those are the automatic defibrillators. So that's slightly different. That's the device that gives you a shock to restart the heart, as opposed to doing the compressions.
No, it leads to CPR assist devices. Is that also included in ongoing training?
The training is included, yes, sir.
Do you have any now?
We do not, no. We have none in the county at this point. So in a situation like that, we'd have to get on the radio and request assistance from who's ever available.
Why do you have it?
It's a two at this point because we don't, because some of the others are, in our opinion, slightly higher priority. At this point, we can usually still get somebody there. I would like to make it a one, but as Mr. Stevens said, I have to make something a two. I'm okay with that. I won't argue with him.
What do you think?
We're only talking about a
Well, we've gotten around thousands of dollars, but we're talking about $44,500. That's what you're doing.
But you said you got me throughout the county just to deliver my child care?
That is correct. The operational medical director for the career staff doesn't agree with their use for whatever reason she has.
But if you could save one life.
She doesn't think that they
You're not using it like Monticello, only you.
So the request is only for Lake Monticello because that the annual response fee for Lake Monticello because our operational medical director will allow us to use them. So that's all we can request for.
What is their reason for not wanting that use?
I can't address that. I don't know.
She doesn't have faith in them,
is my understanding. I have not had that conversation with her personally, but that's my, you're right, that's my understanding.
In a way, I think it should be a one, but the way I think it should leave it at two and let the board supervisors have a discussion about this because we see although I think from what I saw on the TV, it's a good thing to have, you know.
We obviously
if you can only save one to that life.
Right. Yeah.
And it might be yours.
And I can address there are some other differences between what our operational medical director allows and what the career fair are allowed to do. We can carry glucometers, and they're not allowed to use them. I mean, glucometers are used.
If you use a glucometer.
They're not allowed to carry glucometers.
Some guys that have children 12 and 19 use every day by themselves.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. She's extremely conservative in that regard. So.
Maybe we need to look at our contract. Board supervisors to do all that.
So there are already differences between the protocols that the two crews use because we have different operational medical directors, OMDs.
Well, my opinion, I still probably think we should raise it up to one. And there's more funding in the following year, and maybe at that time there may be a difference in your opinion also, too. So, but I mean, that really bothers me that if it could save one life.
As I said, I can't argue with you on that. I agree with you completely. Yes, sir. These are a different. These are an interface with the data system that the 911 center has, and basically what these would do. They're sort of. You can think of it as an enhanced GPS device. Basically, the new system will push the data out to the terminals. It'll give turn by turn directions. Start giving some patient information, whatever data that the dispatch center has, and it'll push it out to the fire trucks and the ambulance. So it's sort of. Sort of an enhanced GPS system, if you will. So they're like a 7-inch tablet, more than a. They're not really used for including call sheets.
That doesn't keep this data. It's just temporary use.
Correct. Yeah. So it's really designed.
Actually, a GPS enhanced. So.
Right. Exactly. So it's a way to get to the incident location more quickly. So the Lake Monticello Fire has been testing these units for the last year or so, but they're the only ones that have them. Basically, most of us, if we need GPS, we're using our own phones or whatever. Most of our drivers know the county well enough that we can get there pretty quickly. We all have maps in the building.
How many of these does this $20,000?
It's It's about 25. I'd have to look up the number.
I don't have a sheet on that, but I couldn't get it.
Yeah, there's five ambulances at Lake Monticello, or four ambulances in the response car at Lake Monticello. The four ambulances in the county. The Lake fire trucks, which is, I have to run through the numbers, but it's six or seven there, plus the 8 or 10 fire trucks throughout the county, plus the attack cars. So you're looking, it's in the 20 to 25 range.
So we're going to leave that at 3, like already there, or? Okay. You're just going to leave that at 3. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is school. I did that request a week or so ago. Maybe next year maybe they need to move your stuff up to the top.
Yeah. We'll do reverse alphabet order.
Well, you know, the first item.
Yeah.
And you know our feeling that we don't think it, since it's instructional, and even said so in your narrative here, that it's instructional. We think it, we all agree that we think the technology should be done, but we think it should go in the regular budget. I myself talked to Mr. Weaver, and I've also talked to Mr. Rittenhouse in the last week or so about this. And, you know, and I'm trying to figure out why, or if it's so needed, why aren't you willing to put it in the regular budget? That I have somebody says, well, Louisa does that. Well, if Louisa burns down houses, you're not going to do that.
No, I won't.
So, you know.
I don't necessarily see the correlation, but I understand.
I made it so ridiculous.
Yes, sir.
My point.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That was on purpose. And so, but, you know, and of course, I reckon I blame myself about that because I know we talked about it last year. I kind of looked up around different counties and mentioned that fact. And of course, but I think we're all in agreement that that the technology is needed. I myself don't want to rank it at all. I think we should just attach a note like we did last year, the board supervisors, for them to make a decision whether it should go into regular budget. In reading the comprehensive plan, which I'm not going to do it again tonight, but I've read it in the past, and we have to follow rules as well as the students in the school.
Yes, sir.
And so, we did that, and we also talked and basically voted on it again this year. And the bad part about it, we're all in favor. Yeah. We can't understand why the administration is not willing to put it in the regular budget.
That's right.
Because
I
think
it's slightly different.
Okay.
You know, our container that had our name tags in it. We grabbed the container and grabbed all of the name tags. And then,
One is.
Yeah, but the microphone's going in the black bags. So you can get all of those.
Not that the schools aren't honest, but once in several millions of dollars to school, or
the computer. Well, first, if you flip the switch, I will. Flip the switch and then put these mics back on. Yeah, because I'm going fast.
And then how about this thing back here?
When you flip the switch,
it does this.
But I can put the mics back up. If you just hit the switch and go back in.
And you take this amount of money, throw it into their budget. You know, some people, you know, it would actually be an increase to their budget, but people would look at it that way somewhere. So I can see why the school says, if it were always in there, they'd probably be fine to leave it in there. But since it hasn't been, they don't want to do
got $600,000 in your budget. Because some people would.
But like I said, both of those state people are in favor of the technology
right.
to be done. But I'm basically is what our comprehensive plan says about.
I know.
And you know we gotta like follow rules.
I know. and I agree that the way you're suggesting to do it is I think we all agree is the way that it's ideally supposed to be done.
Wouldn't it be some offset because
replacing pencil and papers and stuff like that?
You mean if we
currently use
funds out of our current budget? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're asking? Is that the question you're asking?
I think that's the question she's asking.
Yes. If we were to set aside $600,000, $500,000, whatever the case may be for a technology replacement or infrastructure concerns that we have, we would have to set aside money for something. It would have to come from somewhere.
Could they actually make a budget item that is trying to figure out a way to get this done because we all agree that it needs to be done.
Sure.
But we also agree that if you read the rules of the CIP, it doesn't qualify. No way to think have your budget and with a line item for this.
Whenever we get through. Oh, I'll try.
This is $100,000 that would be designated
tomorrow
for this.
Yeah, because my daughter is her birthday, so I'm going to a school.
Well, we would have to come we would put that in tomorrow.
I'm going to leave at 12. I'm going to launch at 12.
The planning committee is that folks aren't going to move forward. Then you want to
work
out about it. We would put additional money for technology in our
budget. You could just answer
well. And that's our plan. Based on the discussion a few weeks ago, I would ask the superintendent, director, and the principals. And said,
well,
how
we
would we look at
the
budget request, along with staffing, well, instructional supplies, et cetera?
We won't be
the
solution
like
stage.
I think you're something to make.
The
well, they're against it. Well, I don't think that's sir. I don't think that's sir. But
no,
it's incumbent upon me to argue.
We just
obviously you see the need.
We just wondered why. We made this suggestion.
You're
right?
Not going to be there Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. We wrote a letter.
And you know what?
If you're
not going to be there Wednesday,
to the Board of Supervisors.
Sure. Doesn't look like they gave you that money.
There.
We're very gracious of any increase they can give us.
Yeah. And then
but I'm talking about it. Yeah. I understand.
Okay.
And
stuff.
I'm suggesting that we put the same type of letter, but also we want to state that we're in favor of it.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I just would like to have a way to figure out how to do it, but like I said, we honestly don't think it complies. I understand. One thing, too, is so repetitious.
Mm-hmm.
And it says non-reoccurring, I think is the actual word. So, anyway, I'm going to recommend that we don't rank it and that we send attach a letter to the Board of Supervisors to that it needs to be come from somewhere.
Finish the letter.
And the Board of Supervisors just make that decision.
Can you can probably work on them while
like I saw another school system the other day which showed how much they spend for each student.
I'm not doing that.
Which we do too, right?
Oh yes, put them on the
website. But they also showed how much
what I may do, you come in and
they also showed how much they spent in debt costs for each student. That was surprising. I've never seen that around here. See, we don't break down my debt.
Do you want
we have broken it out from
the
CIP standpoint before, but I don't know what my debt was.
Well,
you
want to come in at 8, you could probably
get
started earlier so you can get stuff done quicker so you can leave earlier.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, let's do that. I'll come in and then we'll do the web thing. We are trying to do the website. And then you can show me what to do.
I can show
you what you're doing. You leave. Do your thing with your mother. And I can do the letters.
Okay, thank you.
Brainer, if
isn't it?
But, yeah, I think.
They're just certified. You know, just told me how that.
They had a door certified.
Yeah, they're just certified. There's just so many of them. So we can work together for a couple hours and then you'll do what Mike said, and I'll come back. Okay.
Board office relations of $1.5 million.
But I can.
And I think, and I may be wrong, so don't tell me if I'm wrong, but in the discussion, I think that we have.
Who knows? Two of us working, maybe then you just never know.
Tell.
Well, we have a lot of.
Board supervisors make, needs to make some type of decision.
What's not helping? I know I can't help.
What project or beneficial, if they're going to build a new building.
No, it's okay. We can, you'll definitely be.
If they're not, then they need funding.
With the letters, so.
And I think that the hard for us, not knowing what's going to happen with this administration building. And I think that was something that we kind of said something about last year, that we did, they needed to do it. And I think there was too many other things going on this year that didn't really have the discussion. So, I don't know how to. Y'all would have to tell me what you think about how you're going to rank those. You got $1.5 million for renovations.
Yeah, I have no idea.
$180,000 for the roof of the same building. And I was shocked. I'll be the, when Mr. Nichols said here and said there was possibility that they opened the building, they would turn the building back.
Let's talk about that.
Because I never heard that.
Yeah, somebody from the school.
I understand. And you heard that. I did hear, yes, I did hear that. I don't think my board is this, my school board is this, I heard that, but. No, ma'am. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but pun intended, the school's getting away. And I'm in favor of the schools and all the education they get to support on that.
Up the roof especially, they can both of them. I would leave them at one.
Yeah.
But certainly the renovations, include that in the discussion, I mean, that plan.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, that's what I think we discussed earlier in the day, to leave them at one, but yet to put it in the discussion, they need to have the discussion with this building, whatever they want to call it. And that should all be in the same discussion for them when they do the CIP. But we were agreed that we should leave them at one. If that's something that's necessary at this time, then it needs to be done. The roof probably, I don't know what that consists of, so really can't say that's my. Do y'all all agree we leave that at one and then let the, let Ms. Eager make up a decision that she did that? We can put it all on her. Okay. The next item is classified as a three, and it's elementary playground equipment.
That's not only equipment, and it would remain a three from our standpoint. That there's some landscaping, drainage, some actual excavation work that needs to be done in some of our playgrounds right now as well. Some of it is equipment related. I think our principal has done a remarkable job with the closing of Columbia and Cunningham recently, just a couple of years ago, taking all of that equipment, getting it moved over, whether it be fundraisers, community fund drives.
And also send this picture to a friend of mine in a text message.
Keeping all the things compliant, meeting all the insurance requirements. If you go over by Central and look at the playgrounds to the right hand side, as you first come in, the main playground right there, it's kind of washing away the retaining wall. We did some shoring up from our main standpoint. It needs some pretty big excavation.
Yeah, you have to go back to either name.
So it's washing back into the road.
Okay, I'll make it back.
I think we just leave that.
It's hard to go on time.
As far as I'm concerned. And the next two items are over in 2018, both of them ranked as two. That's the Abrams Building over in Central Elementary.
No, that's one of the.
HVAC replacement. just FYI, on the Abraham renovation standpoint, if there were some type of county library administrative building, the Abraham building would not be included in that. We're still using Abraham as a school, alternative school.
What did you say?
I understand that. I know that somebody, a member of the board supervisors, no longer suggests to turn that building down until we go to one time. We're almost at a kid. Yes. It's a wonderful building, but it does need some renovation. So, I suggest we say that. I don't want to care again. I suggest we leave that as a two, since it is in an outline year, both of those projects. Well, you all agree on that.
Just so smart. Thank you very much.
And it actually kind of.
I struggled with this all day.
3 years out, we're talking about it.
They didn't say this.
I did, I do a message in there with.
If you want.
Underground fuel tank replacement.
Picture.
Have I already said?
Yeah, but
you can write a message in there.
Three of that, just curious, just on studies that we're doing right now and looking at longevity of those. They're basically saying this sooner or later, but not anything is going to happen within the next year or so. If you're looking at, well, this is going to be important. In my office, any given day, you might want to watch the ceiling tile again. So yeah, that's definitely a one from a roof standpoint.
Okay, but we don't have that. We're in underground.
No, I know that. I know that. That's why this is the one, and I'm ranking it out there. But we don't need it next year.
Yeah,
but it's very important.
Yeah.
I think these tanks will be included. The new tanks will be at the seventh high school.
We'll use the Carysbrook site. We'll use the high school. About two different fueling sites. We also have some tank concerns that some of our schools do, our fuel tanks themselves, fuel oil and heating oil.
This is for our own benefit, really probably doesn't have anything to do with the discussion.
Yes, sir.
But does any of these fuel companies ever supply tanks like that?
Not that we're aware of. We actually, from looking at an alternative fuel site, putting one at the high school, we did some stuff. We call Mansfield, Pepco, and one other. Can't remember, I'm sorry, top of my head, and getting into a long-term kind of lease agreement, you may be able to get some funding back from them, but as far as saying you'll do this, not like you think about from a home ownership when you're dealing with propane. You lease a 100-pound tank, you have one lot of agreement cost.
Yeah, I've talked to two different oilmen, and they said that they would put them in with the lease agreement.
Okay.
And they
would do you know what companies?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Their responsibility, their insurance, because they're responsible for the safety of that tank.
Okay.
So we might want to look at that.
Okay. Okay. If you can get me some of that information, we'd love to start exploring that.
Okay. Good.
And I do know if you have a leakage in a certain tank, and there's a you pay a certain amount on your fuel cost for working on the dirt and so forth like this.
Yes.
And what they do is they actually. That kind of involves the EPA, but they send somebody out to check it and so forth. They actually have to leave the fuel tank and know a little bit about it. They take the part of it. And then they took the dirt to Richmond and put it through this process. So, of course, it did. So, it's just something that in each time you pay your fuel bill, there's a line on that where you pay the speed.
Yeah,
like a fuel recovery charge or a
Safety
charge. Yeah. So, but I don't see any problem with that. But, being an anxious warning because it's going to be a necessity. And it's still out in 2019 and beyond. And the next one that flew out of middle school restroom reservation, restoration or renovation. I see it's way out in 2020. Is that because you know at that time you're seeing the deterioration now and that time they're going to be? Yeah. The answer to the question, simple answer is yes. We have a wonderful maintenance crew, so we're able to come in and fix most of the things. A lot of it's kind of aesthetic stuff. Matching the tiles, we're doing a complete overhaul of all the restrooms in the middle school. I'm really hoping that there'll be some money left at the end of this summer, based on our renovation project, HVAC and the gym. Remember, there were some locker rooms and renovations along with that $5 million project that graciously put through the Board of Supervisors fund just a couple years ago. I'm hoping we can get the restrooms down by the shoebox done within that money. No promises, we'll certainly try to squeeze out as much as we can. We have to get a new gym floor first and foremost, plus training and all the other work we have. There's the second phase of that project should be done hopefully by the end of July this year.
And the next one is a Prairie Brook Elementary roof replacement. Is that just something that we know because of knowing the life of a normal roof?
Exactly.
Why it is in 2021?
Exactly.
It probably either had a 20-year life expectancy or a 30-year, depending on what type of...
Yeah, it's a 20-year, and that's exactly what it is. Up Roofing did that. They still come back, and they're still actually doing some warranty work. Believe it or not, that's under. It's going to be replaced. We're experiencing it in any given rainstorm a couple of weeks. They'll come back and fix it, or I'll manage to open it.
I don't see any problem with that one the way it is. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I reckon you're approved.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Well, it's actually the program stuff. I don't reckon you really need to about the school budgets and stuff like that.
Do you have questions?
That's something that we basically plan for.
Yes, sir. I'll be glad to stay if you have questions.
Do we have any questions?
We need buses, I can tell you that.
Okay. The next thing is we don't need to rank for the general fund operational cost for major repair and replacement. That is less of the things that you need to take a look at. But not give the sheriff a mobile vehicle. He went out the door.
I said, don't give any vehicles then.
You
have to
be the sheriff gave me. Do y'all feel like ready to go over that? Okay, I think we're basically
ready for a public hearing.
Yeah. Public hearing is next month, right?
Correct.
So we will have the public hearing for this next month. Anybody else have any questions about the CIP?
Gotcha.
Any objections of what we did? Do y'all have any other questions or any other business that we need to go over tonight? I think that's the last item on the agenda tonight.
Just go out.
The next planning commission meeting is Monday, December 14th, Monday evening as well.
December the 14th. Mind you, because of Christmas season. If everybody's in favor, we'll adjourn to the time. 9:55. We're now adjourned.
Okay. November 16th. November 16th. 9:55. Thank you.
I think I'll sign. Yeah, I did.
All right. Thank you.
Let me see.
Y'all have a good evening.
You too. Thank you.
She's going to check to make sure I find them in the right place.
I'm sorry.
She's got them all. I think that's great. See, she puts a little tab so I don't have to go through all the pages.
Yeah, you can just go to the one you need to sign.
Yeah.
Y'all have a good evening.
You too.
Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Y'all too.
It's Joanne. So you gotta stop. Stop recording.